is the right to tell what they do not want to hear. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Tired of the same repetitive government narratives? And wave goodbye to the distractions and rhetoric of corporate media. For this is Anti-Media Radio.
I want to get the language right.
The government is in trouble.
What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another.
What's your definition of meaning?
And now, here's your host, S.M. Gibson.
My name is S.M. Gibson, and this is Anti-Media Radio for October the 20th, 2015. A lot going on right now in the news. If you are part of the 60% of Americans who no longer have trust in corporate media, then you are at the right place this evening. We come to you with no agenda other than the truth. So much of the corporate media, whether it's policy making, whether it's straight up propaganda, whether it's politicians putting people in office, it always seems like there's a bit of an agenda. And we're here to provide you the truth for you to make up your own mind and make your own decisions about what's going on in the world. But you know what? We should be able to do that informed. A few stats that we like to start out from the beginning of every show with on Tuesdays and Thursdays on Anti-Media Radio. I'm going to run down them real quick. So far in 2015, there have been 953 Americans killed by police officers. 953 people killed. That's absolutely, something's got to be done. We're going to talk about one of those cases specifically that happened over the weekend here in a little bit. So far in 2015, there have also been 100 police officers that have died in the line of duty. Not all of those were altercations with other people. 26 of those were automobile accidents. 16 of those were heart attack. 30 of those were by gunfire from an assailant. The city of Chicago, the Windy City, with their staunch gun laws, have seen 2,453 people shot so far this year, 417 homicides, and America's great ally that just gets to do what it wants when it wants has seen at least 135 executions so far, most of those by beheading. As always in the studio, we are joined with the man himself, Mr. Shannon Madden. Shannon, what's going on?
We're going to talk about it. The one story that you had referenced earlier, 31-year-old church drummer Corey Jones was killed by a plainclothes officer in West Palm Beach, Florida.
Yeah,
that is a heartbreaking story.
It absolutely is. We've also got in the news yesterday, Canada elected a new government into power. They elected the Liberals in, which means that Justin Trudeau is now going to be their prime minister coming up at the beginning of November. The big story about this is he ran saying that he was going to get Canada out of involvement overseas. You know, Obama said that. They all say that. Well, today, the soon-to-be prime minister spoke with Barack Obama and said, guess what, we're pulling everybody out of Syria and Iraq, have fun with all that, but we're done. So, you know.
To which Barack Obama probably replied, what? You mean you really meant that? You made a campaign promise and stuck with it?
Yeah, I'm sure he doesn't.
There's some guys smoking up there. Yeah. Well, that was another thing that they, the Liberal Party.
That was for the mayor, though. That was different. Yeah. Also, something that I haven't seen really reported anywhere, which is a very big deal, is NATO having this huge military exercise going on right now. And all they're really saying is we're preparing for war with somebody, but it's definitely not Russia.
No, we're
going to get to you who we're preparing for World War, but it's not Russia. It could be anybody else, but not Russia.
36,000 troops, 36,000 NATO troops were involved in this exercise that was not, clearly not about Russia.
No, clearly not. No, definitely want to make a point that is not what this is about. I tell you some big news, really, that again didn't get reported the way that it should have, is over the weekend, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton both came out and supported Barack Obama's stance of, we're staying in Afghanistan. Sorry, you know, I promised in 2007 when I ran, we'd be out. 2008. Gets elected, we're going to get out. 2009 comes, not out. 2010 comes, not out. 2011 comes, he's got to run for president again. So we're going to get him out. Promise, it's coming.
Any day now.
Any day. 2012, we've got a plan. It's happening. 2013, they're going to be out. January, it's happening. Well, 2015 is here. Not only are they still in Afghanistan, the president himself, our Nobel Peace Prize winning president, has announced that they're going to be over in Afghanistan until at least 2017. So congratulations, Barack Obama. You are officially worthless.
No, he's not. You know how much money you make when you get a Nobel Prize? It's like $1 million.
Yeah, like he didn't have money before then.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But the significance is Hillary Clinton, okay, I don't think there's really any shock in this. She came out over the weekend and in an interview with the Boston Globe, she said, I admire the fact that the president has very strong opinion positions about trying to end wars and bring people home. Okay, right now you have to imagine my voice. It's kind of real witchy-like and a liar, and who knows what I'm going to say at the next point. Just pretend I'm Hillary Clinton and my husband's off somewhere with a prettier girl than I, which is exactly the right place to be in. Absolutist, no matter what the circumstances, and I'm happy that he's going to stick to his position. You have a position of responsibility and a real obligation to try to make the best decisions possible. And I know that's what he did on this one. So she's happy he's sticking to his guns.
Because where was she working when all that was going down? Right across the hall, I believe, yeah.
Speaking of Secretary of State, the State Department started following me on Twitter this week, so that's exciting.
Is it?
It is. I still have no idea why, but good for them. One extra follower. And Bernie Sanders, who everybody's favorite... Favorite liberal, oh, he's going to get us out of the wars. You know, where have we heard this before?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's fine with it. He says he doesn't want to see the Taliban gain more power, and so he thinks that we need to supply the Afghan army's needs, and he sees no problem with keeping troops in the Middle East to quote-unquote keep the peace.
Wait a minute, I thought it was Al-Qaeda, or is it ISIS? No, wait a minute, we're friends with Al-Qaeda now, we're fighting ISIS.
I'm not sure which one it is this week. Who's the good guy this week?
It's clearly not the Taliban, according to Bernie Sanders. So the Taliban's still on the bad, naughty list.
Okay. So should we just assume that if there's somebody out there in the Middle East and someone suggests that they need to be bombed, that they're the bad guy? Should we just assume everybody's the bad guy that's not in Saudi Arabia? Is that to clarify?
Yeah.
Okay, so as long as they're not Saudi Arabia, we're okay to
bomb. We could be just like, you know, most of the police forces across America and just assume that anybody not white is a threat. That makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
And on that note, hashtag boycott Star Wars 7. The most retarded ass hashtag known to man. Because first off, how could anybody dare suggest to boycott anything that have anything to do with Star Wars?
Yeah.
Did you see that horrible Christmas special? There's still no way I would boycott it because it's Star Wars. It's freaking Star Wars, man. All right. Now that we got that out of the way, boycott Star Wars 7 apparently went viral on Twitter today. Now, if you're not familiar with what hashtag boycott Star Wars 7 is about, it's basically a crying out of the white folks that there's
not evidence that the human race is doomed.
More white faces on the screen, as if Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill's doing it too, right? I mean, we're getting all the old gang back.
What about Lando? What about Lando?
That is actually a really good question. And I think now maybe there might be something to this. It's one of the most retarded hashtags I think that's been ever in existence ever. And the fact that it went viral and some of the comments, I don't know if anybody's followed the Twitter thread and actually read some of the mouth breather comments that, and again, to be fair, it is probably about a good 10%, 5 to 10% of the actual comments on there. Most of them are people that are really just like, I can't believe this is happening, and get on their soapbox about, you know, racial injustice and equality and things that we talk about, you know, in glowing tones here on this show. We're all about everybody joining together and pushing past all this crap that serves as a distraction, a means of sneaking one under the table and behind our back. You know, I'm sick of it. I'm absolutely sick of it. I'm sick of the fact here in 2015 that we still have to deal with crap like this.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I'll tell you what, while you're talking about this, go ahead and jump to the phone lines here. Area code 248. Welcome to Anti-Media Radio. This is your host, S.M. Gibson. Tell us your name and where you're calling from this evening.
It's Claire.
Claire, what's going on?
Not much. What's up?
Hey, Miss Claire.
Can't
how you
complain.
I missed you both. It's
I
been a while.
You too. Where you been?
I don't even know. So many places.
That's awesome. You're a jet setter.
Speaking of jet setting, you were recently in California, and I know you went deeper into your whole Nestle endeavors. Tell us what's going on with the whole Nestle story right now.
Well, the best thing about going out and actually visiting the site of the Arrowhead Spring Well, or ostensible well, I should say, was getting to know the people who used to work for the Forest Service, who are so dedicated to actually preserving the ecosystem and preserving things the way they are. And they were really upset about Nestle's drawing water from Arrowhead Spring during this enormously bad drought. And just this week, it was announced that the Center for Biological Diversity and a couple other places were joining together to sue the Forest Service to place an injunction on Nestle from withdrawing the water in the San Bernardino Forest. So this is a good sign.
Well, that's an excellent sign. Activism working.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So what do you think is going to transpire ultimately with the lawsuit?
I'm not sure exactly. Originally, just recently, Nestle agreed to start the environmental impact studies that have been called for by the public for so long because their permit expired in 1988, which is, you know, 27 years ago. It seems to me that this lawsuit could actually do some good if it works out as an injunction to prevent Nestle from drawing any more water during this insane drought. There's also language inside the lawsuit that, from what I can tell, looks as if it's setting up the groundwork for a monetary lawsuit of some sort. I could be wrong, but that it just seems very obvious to me. If that's the case, then that could help as well. But Nestle is making so much profit, only having to pay $524 to withdraw millions and millions of gallons of water. You know, unless there's a very clear definition of making them stop, they're not going to.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people forget, too, that it's the CEO of Nestle who, you know, it's kind of hit viral a few times on the internet, but it's he that said that water should not be a human right. And and that he's about, you know, making money off of it, and that's what they're doing right now. They don't care about the drought. They don't care about anything. It's about making money.
Exactly, and, you know, the thing that was told to me at one point by these scientists, one is a biologist and, like, climatologist and such, the thing that was told to me is that if, by scientists who are working on a project with them, it's the intention of private corporations to buy up the rights to the world's water supply so that we would have to be sold the most basic unit of human life on the planet. So all those conspiracy theorists and such can, you know, rejoice because these certifiable scientists who are the best in their field have all said that private water ownership is the goal overall.
I mean, where do you... When you can, I mean, you're controlling people's lives on a complete grand, sickening scale. You know, that's, you know, the conspiracy theory is that that's happening now, and to a degree, of course it is, but to a degree we still have, you know, our basic everyday whatever. If you can't afford water and it's all privatizing water, think about that. Like, think about, we live in a world that people want to privatize water. You die without it. Your children die without it.
Mm-hmm. And the oceans are dying in themselves, becoming increasingly acidic and bleaching out, like, the coral reef and such that is equally as important as the Amazon rainforest in terms of oxygen on the planet. So, you know, this is the perfect scenario.
This is the perfect scenario for insane people.
Yes.
And... it's what's sad, it's not so much that, okay, some crazy person had this idea, because there's lots of crazy people out there. What's so sad is, like, this is happening. Like, there's people with enough money and enough means to start having this idea progress to the point we're dealing with this.
And again, when we first talked about this story, when Claire first wrote the article on antimedia.org, you know, one of the things that really stuck out with me is that all of these steps that were taken to ensure that all they had to do was pay this little $500. And they wrote it off as a, you know, clerical error, or, well, you know, we kind of talked about it, but nothing was ever discussed. And then we find out that we have a former a Forest Service employee now works for Nestle. And is there, you know, Claire, help me with this. His official title is... the Forest Service worker that now serves or works for Nestle, him and the CEO apparently served on the same board together at one point in time.
The Department of Screwing Over the Human Race.
Yeah. So, yeah, and, you know, again, this is exactly what we talk about on the show, night in and night out, about corporate interest. Controlling politicians to be able to do whatever they want to do, however they want to do it, up to and including stealing water.
Stealing, I think, is a good word for it, too, because not only is Nestle taking this water under an expired permit, but the conditions of doing so was more or less a gentleman's agreement for Nestle to stick to the original strictures of their drawing spring water permit. And for one thing, as we've uncovered in this investigation, amazingly, what Nestle is drawing from this well is not spring water at all. And, you know, I'm glad that the lawsuit has been picked up on the end that it has, but another possible lawsuit, if this one fails, is the fact that what Nestle is drawing from Arrowhead Spring is not spring water whatsoever. And that has been largely ignored. I think that's one of the most major issues, because spring water can be rejuvenative and it can really help people's conditions and it can, you know, aid your health and such. So to claim something as spring water when it essentially is not at all spring water is an egregious error.
But this whole thing is helping a few people's conditions, because there's a few rich people getting richer, and that's helping their condition. And you screw us. There's about five evil people that are there.
I do plumbing work for a living. Why don't we just go up to Yellowstone and go ahead and get Old Faithful, claim it as our own. We're going to start drawing water from it. We'll pay whatever, $524 a year. I can swing that. I got that in my savings.
But can you afford the lobbyist that goes with that?
Well, you got to sell the water first. Right. I mean, it's a chicken and egg thing, you know. Yeah, but you hear how ludicrous of an idea that sounds.
It's happening.
That's exactly what they're doing. Exactly what they're doing from a national park. It's crazy.
They thought they were just going to butter us all up with their candy bars and steal the water from behind us.
And, you know.
Yeah, it's not that simple.
The great thing is that I don't live in California. You know, Californians need to be, completely outraged about this. And I don't understand why, particularly as drought-stricken as they are, why this is not a much bigger issue, front page, headline, every single day until this matter is resolved.
Well, I think we've learned during all of Claire's investigation that Nestle is very rich.
Yeah, because, and here's my point, when you mentioned a moment ago that there is possibly, you know, a lawsuit that would involve an exchange of monetary situation. Who ultimately benefits from that? Okay, there's a big judgment declared against Nestle, a speeding ticket, if you will. And then, of course, the lawyers that are litigating whatever lawsuit, they'll make their cut. Then where's the rest of the money go, that judgment go?
I mean, do you really believe
back to the government entities that actually got, you know, Nestle this far at our
right
to begin with?
Will it be dispersed to the people of California?
That's what I think should happen.
And if it is, the settlement could be massive, and at the end of the day, you know what, each citizen of California is like $3.
Which is very well should be, I might add. Because look at not only just the actual monetary value of a gallon of water, which is still an insane concept to me anyways. But I mean, you know, think about the actual environmental impact of what they've been doing out there. I mean, Claire, you were there. I mean, give us a firsthand account of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pristine environment, and it's a beautiful, just silent, amazing sight. And there are signs that people have been there all over the place. I mean, Nestle has built essentially a helipad there for their helicopter to come in to monitor the quote-unquote well. You know, I mean, everything is manipulated. It's all a narrative. It's all, like, designed to, like, show you the best of what it is that they're supposedly doing when all of it just stinks.
A helipad. I'm sorry. My mind just got stuck right there. I think I just blew a circuit.
It's not an actual helipad. Like, there's no asphalt or anything like that, but it's a cleared spot of land with very little shrubbery or, you know, brush or anything like that. And the day that I was out there, there were signs that there had recently been a helicopter there.
Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. Dr. Evil strikes again. There is another story that I know you've been covering, Claire, that I kind of want to jump to real quick. The story of 31-year-old Corey Jones in West Palm Beach, Florida. Tell us a little bit about that story. We kind of touched on it at the beginning of the show a little bit, but tell us more about what you found out.
Well, okay, so Corey Jones was a very stellar, upstanding citizen in his community in Florida. He was known for showing up at all hours of the day, you know, practicing drums because he played drums in the church's band. He was very well known for being friendly and outgoing and not causing trouble ever in his life or being in trouble with the law ever in his life. And he goes home from band practice late one night and has to summon a friend to come and help him on the side of the highway.
His car broke down, correct?
Yeah, his SUV broke down. So the friend comes, decides he can't really do anything, and as the friend leaves, he sees his friend, you know, Corey Jones, on the phone calling for tow service. And less than 45 minutes later, Corey Jones was dead by the hand of police, who had shot him dead.
And he was not in his patrol car, correct? And was not in uniform.
He was not in his patrol car. He was not in uniform. Who knows what was actually said at the scene, but if you're sitting alone on the road at about 3:15 in the morning, as Corey Jones was, I can imagine somebody approaching with all of those things claiming to be a cop would be pretty intimidating.
Right, and there's obviously no body cam. There's no dash cam footage of this.
Right.
And
yeah, the vehicle was not equipped with dash cam footage. Obviously, he did not have body cam footage. There is no footage of this event. And the officer involved is now on paid administrative leave, of course, and they are doing a quote-unquote independent investigation, which is actually being done by the sheriff's office.
And here's something that's crazy. Okay, so the cop, too, is saying that Corey had a gun. His family's saying he's
no,
never...
they're not even going that far. They're saying Corey was armed. They say, in their report, they say that Corey Jones approached or confronted the officer armed, but they don't say what he was armed with. And then they say that after the following the confrontation, the officer's weapon discharged, resulting in the subject's death. So it's like they are taking as much responsibility and accountability out of the equation as they possibly can.
Because the family said he's never owned a gun in his life, he's never had a gun, anything like that.
Right. He's a perfectly just upstanding citizen going about his business. He got stalled on the side of the road, and next thing that happens, he ends up dead.
Here's the thing that's bonkers about this to me. I mean, there's so many of these stories that are crazy, but let's take this one, for instance. So many of these, the officers on duty, okay? This would be equivalent to me being a pharmacist. And during the day as a pharmacist, people come in with lots of pain, and I have to sell them Oxycontin to relieve that pain. Well, then I get off of work at 5 o'clock one day, and then at midnight that night, I meet a guy on the street corner and sell him Oxycontin. That's when I stop being a pharmacist and start being a quote unquote illegal drug dealer. That's what this cop did. He's not on duty and he's shooting people.
Well, now bear in mind, he is on paid administrative leave. And I think,
well, at least he's getting paid.
I really wish that we would quit using that term and call it what it is: vacation. He is on vacation.
Paid vacation.
Paid vacation. I don't get paid vacation.
You know the struggles I have to go through to get paid vacation.
Gosh.
It's an interesting dynamic. I mean, if you look at the way police act, they're given so much authority by the state that they feel like they have free rein to kind of behave however they please. And without any, you know, any sort of accountability or responsibility or anything to uphold any of the laws, the police have pretty much become our Gestapo. I mean, they're doing what they want to do to whomever they want to do it, and there does not seem to be any sort of system of accountability in place for them. For instance, I just found out that federally they wanted to start reporting statistics for police deaths in custody. And it was recently disclosed that cases like Tamir Rice were not actually on that government list of deaths by police. Eric Garner was not on the list of deaths by police.
Those didn't count, yeah.
Hmm. But, you know, everything's okay. Go back to sleep.
Well, it was already on the news. You should have already read about it.
Right. So we don't mean to include it.
You got to add that into your account yourself. I mean, you know, come on. can't expect the government to do everything.
Like, they don't even count it in their statistics. Some of these high-profile cases.
Of cops murdering citizens. Unarmed yeah. citizens. One of them selling loose cigarettes. And another you mentioned was a 12-year-old boy playing with a toy gun in a park.
And this one was a stalled vehicle on the side of the highway.
Who hasn't had their car break down on the side of the road?
Or better yet, late at night and the cops roll up on you.
Right. I mean,
I've had it happen before.
Look, I can tell you right now, when I was younger, I'd have my car break down on the side of the road and I can't fix what's going on with it. And like a cop will pass by and it's like, really? Now, like, you'll pull me over, but now you're not
going
to stop.
They'll pull you over, find out what you're doing, where you're going, and they'll watch you work on your vehicle with a license.
Yeah.
Run your tag, run your insurance, go ahead and run your license, make sure you don't have any warrants, make sure you haven't been arrested in the city before, because God help you if you do, then they're going to come back, well, hey, we heard you had some trouble here a couple of years ago. What was all that about? Now, bear in mind, you may have already gone, and I personally haven't gone through this situation, but I know people who have. Where, you know, an old situation from when they were arrested when they were a kid or did something stupid way back when or a misunderstanding. They've already went to court, been tried on, this, that, and the other. And here you have a cop at 2 o'clock in the morning while you've got a busted tire or busted whatever under the hood. And you're sitting there frustrated as it is. And then a police officer comes up. Now, bear in mind, I've had good situations where that's happened where an officer, believe it or not, apparently had nothing else going on, was actually a decent human being. Well, hey, let me see if I can't help you, or let me get you a tow truck.
I've had that happen. There are
plenty of great police officers out there right now, and I want to stress that as we talk about this particular subject. What we're talking about is the ones that are endangering those good cops' lives with this type of behavior. And here we have yet another African-American in a very, very white town, West Palm Beach, White Palm Beach. It's very, 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 very high Caucasian population there. A lot of money. And here we have a African American in a broken down vehicle, 2 o'clock in the morning, and a plainclothes police officer. We don't know if he announced.
That's not himself. His vehicle.
We don't know if he announced himself as a police officer. Hey, I'm a police officer. Can I help? Or I'm a police officer. What are you doing? We don't know any of that. All we know is that here we have a man working on his vehicle, and somebody pulls up and starts walking towards him that he doesn't know.
Yeah, and at some point we know he pulls a gun out and shoots it.
Because I know there's areas around here if somebody just pulls up 2 o'clock in the morning that I don't know. That doesn't, you know, tell me they're a police officer or they're an emergency personnel or somebody there to help or somebody there in an official capacity. Yeah, I'm going to freak out too. I'm going to grab the nearest thing next to him and say, hey, what are you doing here, buddy?
Well, you know, and here's where the vague language comes into play. You know, people say, well, it's just semantics, you know, who cares, whatever. But it actually makes a great deal of difference. If you look at the police report from this incident, it talks about how an armed suspect, not saying like how he's armed or what he's armed with or what he's actually doing, confronted the officer. They don't say attacked, and they say that this was a confrontation after the confrontation was over, but they don't say what took place in the confrontation or what it was made up of or if it was an attack.
What you want to bet, like, if there was something in his hands, it was something he had to be worked. He had working on
the
car.
Yeah, he had the hood up.
His middle finger.
Huh.
Very well could have been that, too. I fixed plenty of things with my middle finger, believe it.
It's just a really sorry situation, and everybody is trying to figure out how to grasp what actually happened. Yet again, it's like, I mean, how many times is it deja vu all over again for these families? And when is it, you know, who is it going to be next? Is it finally going to hit some elitist, you know, sort of daughters or sons, lives before something happens, or do we have to keep going through this over and over?
But here's what you have to remember: that's not, even then, I don't think anything would change, because that one situation, if that does happen, the cop will be punished, that person will be dealt with. But this huge problem that we deal with on a day-to-day basis, and the people that don't have money to represent themselves, and the people that are considered the lower class of the United States, those people are going to still continue to be picked on. Those are the people that are defenseless to the establishment. It's, you know,
if it happens to some rich guy's daughter, well, that cop's going to go to jail for life. But if it happens
to me or
you...
Yeah, but you know, it's sad because these same people are the ones, like, waving the flags of these corporations and stuff that are, like, busy, like, dealing with their sisters and stuff like that. I mean, like, I don't know. This whole business is just amazing how inbred it is, how, like, backpatting, and it's like, you know, the government always claims that it doesn't have any ins with corporations, but you see these alliances, and it's, like, proven on paper. I mean, how can you escape any of this?
Oh, that's conspiracy talk. You've been reading.
Yeah.
It's all
down. Yeah, I don't even know in tinfoil, so now come on.
Well, that's the problem. You're letting the brainwaves get in there, and you're reading all these statistics, and you're letting the statistics influence.
You know, I was talking to you before the show. I was watching a documentary on Bill Hicks, the late comedian who's... If you've never heard any of his stand-up, Bill Hicks is phenomenal. And one of the little things that he said on his stand-ups, he was at a Waffle House in Nashville, and a waitress, was reading a book and, you know, kind of eating some food or whatever. And the waitress came up and asked him in a very southern voice, "What are you reading for?"
What are you reading for?
This is why everybody that's within earshot of this broadcast needs to do your homework, because this is how business is done in 2015 America, and has been done for quite some time. And until we stand up and we start to do the things like what Claire's done, actually boots on the ground and get involved in some of these situations, they're going to persist, and it's going to get worse.
Well, here's what scares me. Here's what my fear is. I think there's a lot of people that are awake to things that weren't necessarily awake to things in 2008 when Obama got in office. I think people were just so fed up with the Bush administration and all those lies that they're like, okay, Obama's going to be hope. He's going to be changed.
Change.
And I think there was, you know, kind of the Ron Paul sect of people and quite a few other people. They're just like, nah, I don't trust any of these people. I don't trust McCain. I don't trust Obama. But, you know, Obama supporters especially said, oh, no, it's going to change. Everything's going to be great. Well, he ended up just like every other president we've ever had. And now we're seeing people that are just completely jaded because of Obama in that situation. And yet, but Bernie Sanders is going to fix stuff. I know, because he told me.
What's the definition of insanity?
Right, doing the exact same thing over and over and over again. And that's what Bernie Sanders is. I mean, at least with Jeb Bush, it's like, well, clearly we know what you're going to do. You're not even hiding it. You're going to get in there and just blow everybody up. But Bernie's coming across like, I'm going to fix everything. Don't pay attention to my foreign policy record. Please, whatever you do, don't pay attention to that. I'm all about peace. Obama wants to stay in Afghanistan. Sure, that's a great idea. Why not? Let's do that. Peace in the Middle East. Yeah. I'm putting boots on the ground and blowing people up.
Everybody's going to get free college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, forget the fact that we're already completely bankrupt at this point, but Bernie's going to fix stuff. You know, even Hillary, everybody knows what they're going to get with Hillary. Like, Hillary, Jeb, it's more of the same, but people actually believe. I hear it about Rubio. Oh, my gosh, I'm not even getting
it's
into that
gets
topic.
Hard on that, yeah, because that's the truth. Both guns blazing.
Yeah, but at least you kind of know what you're going to get. But people really believe that Bernie is going to be like some great change. And the stuff he says about the banks, I agree with that. I think that's great. I question when he's debating Hillary Clinton and he can turn around to her when he's giving his big speech about the banks and look at her and say, guess what, you're number one contributors, Goldman Sachs, just like Jeb Bush,
yeah.
Just like Ted Cruz's wife was an executive for, just like Marco Rubio. You all get money from Goldman Sachs because you're all the same thing. He could have buried her, but no, he's a good politician that does it as he's told,
And we'll get a good cabinet position out of
right.
him. If and when Hillary wins the election, which doesn't look like it's going to happen. You know,
Now we're talking about getting old Uncle Joe in the race there.
Yeah, that's
old Uncle, thing. Drunk Uncle Biden.
Nobody wanted him in how many times has he run? Like, well, several at least. I'll take that.
And, you know, the story of his son is very unfortunate, but that's going to be used as a political tool. To get the sympathy vote. Mm-hmm. Claire, what's your view of the whole, I guess, Bernie, Biden, that whole situation?
Well, you might be asking the wrong person for the audience, I don't know, but I thoroughly do not believe in the vote right now. As long as the Electoral College is in place and as long as the polls are so rife with propaganda that there's virtually nothing else there, it's just, you couldn't pay me to vote right now. I mean, it just wouldn't happen. You know, I see some of the values of the different players, like what they're saying, but it just, every single time it turns out to be the same thing, which is why I just will no longer vote.
I mean, and that's the sad part, that's where we've come to in this country. First off, with the Electoral College, here living in Alabama, our vote is meaningless because it doesn't matter if we go out and vote for whoever. You could vote for Bernie Sanders here, and your vote's going to go to whoever the Republican nominee is. You can vote for whatever. Your vote will be counted towards the Republican nominee, 100% guaranteed.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, there's states like that where it's going to go to the Democrat, 100% guaranteed, whatever. Like, they're both the same party. But what I'm saying is, you know which candidate's going to get that vote. And then you get the states like Ohio, like Florida, that are, you know, they go between in the elections. And those are the states where the election fraud happens. Look, as much as I could not stand Al Gore, the facts are the facts. He won the election in 2000. He did. That's not the first time that's happened, and I guarantee you it's not going to be the last time that's happened. You know, there's story of actual voter fraud, but the stories about the Diebold machines, that's election fraud. That's something completely different. And when you go ahead, Claire.
They're even doing that ahead of the elections, though. I mean, like with the recent, you know, Democratic debate, you know, Bernie actually won according to virtually every single social media poll that there was available to be seen, and mainstream media painted it as if Hillary won no matter what. And then when, you know, mainstream media was called out on their odd call, then they re-defended Hillary again, saying basically, I told you so, she won, that's it, that's my opinion, and you just, you know, your opinion is invalid.
Well, so I don't know if you remember watching the debates in 2008 when they were having the Democratic primaries then. I watched every one at least twice, and Hillary absolutely destroyed him. He hadn't had that much experience. He didn't really have a grasp of what he was talking about, kind of like Trump. He had these big ideas that he would say, but the specifics, he wasn't all the way fully formed there yet. And she was just owning him in these debates. And then they would cut back to, you know, the talking heads, and they're like, well, Barack, he looked great tonight. It's like, what did y'all just watch? She devoured him. Like, she tore him up. What are y'all talking about? And we saw it in 2012 with Romney. Romney would just stand there. Oh, he's the most electable.
Yeah.
Like, you know, as despicable as, like, somebody like Newt Gingrich was, he was, you know, he was sharp in the debates as far as on top of the other
Gingrich
candidates.
Actually put up a good fight.
But you know, he could get in there and out-talk him and talk around him. And Romney just kind of stand there, and then the talking heads, oh, Romney, he looks so good. This is going to be the candidate. Man. This is it. This is the guy. It's just like, what are you people talking about? No.
No, what is this evil plastic sorcery?
Right. And, you know, I'm telling you, we've said it for a while, Rubio, watch out. That's kind of where they're pointing now. You know, they're giving Jeb the benefit. They're keeping Trump around. Trump is somebody I really can't figure out. Is he an operative for the Democratic Party? Is he just
running on pure ego? Like, does he really want to win? Does he not want to win? I don't know what he's doing.
He's only there for shock value. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's even for his own agenda. I don't even think there's another agenda involved.
Oh, I could absolutely see that. But the thing about him is he's getting all this coverage because these news outlets, quote-unquote news outlets that nobody watches anymore, are getting a bunch of ratings because they're getting to put Donald Trump over there 23 hours a day, and he's saying all this crazy stuff, and they get ratings out of it. So I don't even think them showing Trump is him shoving him down your throat because, like, oh, this guy's crazy, I'm going to win. It's not like they're telling you he's going to win, but they're sure giving him all the time in the world because of the ratings.
Yeah.
It's like they get to run the craziest parts of The Apprentice 23 hours a day, and it's brand new and live every day. What's the next crazy, idiotic thing that's going to come out of this guy's mouth?
Mr. Putin, you're fired.
Right. Now, I don't know, Claire, if you heard one thing Trump has come out and said this last week. Oh, man, it's not good when you start agreeing with him. Calling out Jeb. For when Jeb says your brother kept us safe, he's like, did he really? Because your brother knew about 9/11. And then he doubles down on saying it when they question him. Saying, no, their intelligence was there. You know about it.
It was while the Clinton administration knew.
Yeah, like Trump is sitting there calling out the Bushes for knowing about 9/11. And they just ignored the intelligence. That's one reason Donald Trump will never be president. As crazy and psychotic as the man is, you can't say stuff like that.
Well, I mean, Bush is being tried for war crimes, like, right now. There's a lawsuit ongoing that has him being tried and his administration for war crimes, which is, of course, most appropriate.
But what do you think is going to actually come of that?
Nothing, of course.
But, you know,
he just won't be able to travel as freely as he used to.
He can do what he wants.
Not as often, right.
Yeah.
The Saudis will just come to him. They've done it before.
Oh, yeah. They know where he lives.
But that's the thing about Rubio that scares me. He's the one, I'm telling you, he's the one that's going to be dropping the bombs. It's crazy.
But, and you know, the funny thing is, though, that it really doesn't matter who's there because they're all ready to drop the bombs.
Oh, they will. They absolutely will.
Every single one of them.
Bernie, Hillary, they support Afghanistan.
Has Rand Paul dropped out yet?
Not yet. He's been consistent on not bombing people, really. But
yeah.
Still,
but no, nobody's got time for that. It's all about bloodthirsty, you know. But we got to do what we can to make America great. It involves a gun in every brown person's face.
That's what they've turned it into. It's disgusting. Mm-hmm. What our country, we've allowed it to become. We have allowed the media to control our narrative. And I think we find out some of the truth and they come back behind us and confuse us and nobody knows what's going on. So they just say, well, I heard it on TV. I'll believe that.
Yeah, I need to go back and read the last few pages of the book 1984 by George Orwell.
Oh, yeah.
That's exactly what that's all about.
Here's some little bit of good news to report. I know you've done a little bit of reporting on Saudi Arabia recently, Claire. Ali al-Namir, they're saying he will not be crucified now. The young man that was arrested at 17.
The British are saying we need to point that out.
And also that their 74-year-old UK citizen that's been over there, and they sentenced him to 350 lashes because he had homemade wine. They're saying that's not going to happen now, too. It should be mentioned that Saudi Arabia and the UK were in talks with a big prison contract, and the UK was going to give them a bunch of money. According to the sources, you know, coincidental, didn't have anything to do with that, but they did pull the contract. That being said, it has just come out. I know you, Claire, if you want to elaborate on this a little bit, the UK is now the largest arms dealer to Saudi Arabia, just barely over the United States. They're running neck and neck, but the UK has edged them out a little bit.
Well, it looks like they had that by design. I mean, the UK wanted to be the biggest arms supplier, and they courted the different branches of government and business people who are prominent and made it happen. So now they are, you know, this horrible human rights abuser's biggest arms dealer, basically.
Well, the United States helped them out, too. I think it was, what, 37% of the arms were coming from the UK and 36% were coming from the United States, something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of the British government, they are now proposing to be able to pull out of the European Convention on Human Rights when they send troops into combat, because they are now claiming that human rights lawsuits are going to cost the people of Britain. Of course, they're putting it back on, you know, we're trying to save your money. £150 million for human rights lawsuits. So the government's response to this is, hey, let's not stop committing war crimes and these horrible human rights abuses. Their response is, let's pull out of the Convention for Human Rights. That way we get a free pass to do whatever we want, and it won't cost you any money. That's deplorable. Deplorable.
Agreed.
Like, what's going through your head when your solution to getting sued over human rights abuses is, we just won't be a part of the group anymore? That's what the UK is attempting to do right now.
Like, I know it's cliche, but how do these people sleep?
I don't know. I mean, part of me thinks they sleep...
On some of the nicest sheets you could possibly have.
Yeah, part of me thinks they sleep fine. Like, part of me thinks they sleep fine.
A super high thread count. A thread count we didn't even think was possible.
Egyptian cotton.
Silk. It'd be nice.
Yeah, but is the Egyptian cotton worth it? Do you not have the visions rolling through your head of just people getting maimed and killed and families getting separated? Does that not play through their head?
Let me just roll over to the cool side of the pillow. And that's really what it boils down to. I mean, you can't have any kind of soul and conduct business like this. And this is what we pretty much placed our trust and our power into these people's hands. These people that have no conscience whatsoever for the thousands and millions of lives that are affected by their decisions to make a little more money. That more money that they don't need, that they can never spend in 100 lifetimes.
Well, this is way bigger than money, though.
You have this whole paradigm going on that's like self-feeding. I mean, it's not ever going to stop unless we stop it. I mean, there has to be a reason for peace. There has to be a reason to stop all the infighting and such before any of this will let go.
But there's so many people. People can't get along with their neighbors, much less we're talking about people that just absolutely loathe each other with some of these countries, the Iran and Saudi Arabia back and forth business, who just hate each other. I mean, we're talking about some deep, deep stuff. And as much as I love and sit here and preach and say, everybody chill out, like, get over it. Like, people have to get over their fear. They have to get over their pride. And they have to get over their lust for power. Because there's no reason that people cannot respect each other. Everybody tends to them, their family, their loved ones, and us all work together to make a better world. But everything has to be this, knock it off my shoulder, cross this line. You'll find out what happens. I'll take you out. It's like, chill out. What are you like?
Exactly what's going on with the posturing over in Syria right now.
Yeah.
You know.
But we're seeing that with, you know, Putin's going in there and taking out all the stuff. The United States has supposedly been taking out or trying to take out whatever. They've just been funding people. So many people hear you say, well, Putin's over there taking out ISIS along with, you know, the moderate rebels. Which, who knows the difference at this point? One day they're one thing, the next day they're another thing. But they're like, well, you're in love with Putin. It's like, no, we're just saying he's doing this one thing. That doesn't mean that he hasn't committed his own human rights violations. That doesn't mean he hasn't done this. You know, you can still acknowledge the stuff they do. I mean, he's done a masterful job at the chess game of Edward Snowden. That doesn't discount all the other horrible things he's done. We're just saying, okay, he's done this well, and it's just, he's using Snowden as a pawn to make the United States look stupid. And that's what the Syria issue is, just on a much grander scale.
He's really looking for a new home right now, too. I believe they...
But he's not going to come back here because he's not going to get a fair trial.
Oh, no. Now, Bernie will give him a little time off of good behavior.
Yeah, right.
So maybe that might be another reason to vote Bernie in. He'll go easy on Snowden. Yeah, that's going to happen.
It's not going to happen. You know, we're talking about Mr. Whistleblower President right now. He's going to protect all the whistleblowers. How'd that work out? Go ask Chelsea Manning how that worked out.
The minute any American law enforcement officer sees Edward Snowden, the first words they're going to say is, "He's got a gun!" And that's it. It's over. Yeah.
Donald Trump! We just said, you know, one decent thing the man said. Now we're turning around back to this crazy. He said Snowden should be killed. Like, this man's running for president. And he says Snowden should be killed.
Should be killed for telling the American people the truth.
I can't understand. I can't deal with people. Like, what is it? Saying the American people are the enemy. Like, this is blatantly being said. Blatantly being said, and yet we still live under this illusion that these are elected officials there to serve us. They're not put there by some sort of corporate control scheme with money. That's what it is. The Democratic Party, the Republican Party, both are corporations with a lot of money that put in their own players. And some of these players serve other special interests, other corporations. This isn't some grand conspiracy. This is called Washington. That's what it is. It's what the lobbyists are. This is all in your face, plain as day.
Business as usual.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yet people can't seem to get it through their head. They don't seem to understand. Look, they always say follow the money. Well, follow the money. It always goes back to a handful of corporations with a handful of people with their hands in those corporations.
Because once you start getting that far in and seeing where the money actually really comes from, it suddenly starts getting a little murky.
It does.
Once you get it back to these corporations, then suddenly it's like, well, where'd the money go? Like,
and it's greed.
Well, like these super PACs. I mean, that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. You know? Where did the money come from to fund the super PACs? And we all know, but we all really don't know.
Nobody pays attention to it. And anybody can fund anybody through any way and make it not look like they fund them if they don't want to.
Business as usual.
And yet somehow this is considered some grand conspiracy. I don't understand. It's mind-blowingly insane how anything that is a counter-narrative to what you're force-fed on TV every day, that just automatically becomes conspiracy, even if it's in black and white, fact, document-proven, everything, it happened, there's footage, whatever. Well, we didn't report it, so that's conspiracy.
And, you know, the bad thing is you can lay all of these facts down in front of somebody right now, and they'll look at it and look back up at you and, well, so? Why do you care about that sort of thing?
What are you going to do about it?
What are you reading for?
What are you reading for?
What are you reading for?
What you reading for? Well, Claire, thank you so much for calling in tonight. We are almost out of time. We will be back on Thursday evening. Nick will be back tomorrow night, as always. Same anti-media time on ucy.tv/GAMR. For Miss Claire Burnish and Shannon Madden, this is S.M. Gibson with Anti-Media Radio. On Thursday, out.
Peace. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.